Teaching Science Amidst Controversy by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract. Among various controversies in science teaching today, one of the sharpest involves the creation-evolution debate. How are teachers to respond to pressures from all sides on this? Here we take a brief look at some divergent definitions of science and religion, ask how we can teach science in a publicly funded setting, and propose some solutions. These involve recognizing the limits of science, distinguishing the known from the unknown and facts from theories, discussing open questions, and handling the controversy sensitively. There are a number of areas of controversy in science teaching today. Our concern here is the creation-evolution dispute. Teachers are typically caught in the middle on this dispute. If they teach evolution, they get flack from evangelical parents. They teach creation, they get flack from some of the other parents. They teach neither or both, they also get complaints. What's a teacher to do? Well, we're going to try and look at that in this talk. We want to start out with the question of what is science, because some ambiguity and confusion here certainly doesn't help in thinking through the controversy. We can think of two rather distinct definitions of science. You can obviously think of more. But one of these would be explanation without invoking the supernatural, probably one of the standard definitions used in science today. And the other would be explanation of how things really are. And in a sense, scientists want to opt for that as well. However, confusion arises when people switch back and forth between these two definitions, explanation without invoking the supernatural, and explanation of how things really are. Or when they assume the two definitions are equivalent. Part of the debate over whether creation or evolution is scientific comes in at this very point. We suggest that the teacher needs to clarify this ambiguity. Treating two definitions as equivalent is, in fact, to preach a philosophical or religious view. Statement that the two, trying to find out how things really are, or explanation of how things really are, and explanation without recourse to the supernatural, assuming they're equivalent really means you're assuming a philosophical naturalism, if you like, a secularism. The view, if you like, of Carl Sagan in his opening words of his series Cosmos. The cosmos is all that is, or ever was, or ever will be. Not a scientific statement. What is religion? Well, there are also various definitions here. Consider these two. One, beliefs regarding ultimate reality. Or two, worship of a supreme being. Now, according to definition one, beliefs regarding ultimate reality, religion is already being taught in those classrooms where the worldview evolutionism, or materialism, or secularism, or scientism, is being taught or promoted. According to definition two, worship of a supreme being, this is not what creationists are asking for in science classes, that the classes involve worship of a supreme being. Can we teach science in a publicly funded setting? Well, there's some tension here, I think. But public funding does not remove one's responsibility to teach truth. It does raise questions regarding fairness in a pluralistic society. Taxpayers are rightly incensed if they feel they are paying the salaries of people who are attacking their worldviews. Obviously, parents can send their children to private schools, and many are. And one of the great lamentations among public school officials and such is that all these people aren't going to public schools anymore. But one of the reasons they aren't is they are incensed that they feel they're paying the salaries of people who are attacking their worldviews. However, that still does not alleviate the problem, even if these parents do send their kids to private schools, because they still have to, by their taxes, help finance public education. And so even if the kids aren't there, even for taxpayers who don't have any kids, they may be concerned that worldviews are being advocated that are, they think, mistaken, and their own worldviews are being attacked. This really raises the question of whether the First Amendment regarding the establishment of religion is consistent with public schooling. I'm not going to answer that here. There is a tension. Perhaps we need to adopt the voucher system, as most other Western democracies have done, that the state is going to support education, but because we're in a pluralistic society, it's not going to support only one kind of education, but is going to leave it up to the parents with a voucher system that they may use their tax money for education for school they wish. Another feature that is desirable in our whole discussion of teaching science amidst controversy, and particularly this creation-evolution controversy, is to recognize the limits of science. There has tended to be, in much of the 20th century anyway, a belief that science is facts and other things, and this will depend on who the speaker is. Other things might be liberal arts, other things might be philosophy, other things might be religion, etc. These are merely opinion, etc. Well, we need to recognize the limits of science. Science is empirically based, and it operates with a limited database. If you have a complete database, you know all the facts that exist, then even though science is empirically based, it's pretty solid. But we live inside a universe, and we haven't even seen all of that yet. And we have limitations at the micro scale that prohibit us from investigating very carefully things down at that level. We have limited information about what happened in the past and zero information about what's going to happen in the future. So science is empirically based and it operates with a limited database. Therefore, its conclusions are going to be limited as well. Now, as a matter of fact, that's true of most other human activities as well. Those who are religious and believe in revelation believe that revelation is not empirically based, but of course the question of defending a particular revelation is going to be empirically based, and we are operating with a limited database in both both areas, and we also are empirically based. For instance, for Bible believers, one still has to interpret what the thing the scripture says, and that involves empirical activity, if you like. But this is a real limit of science, and shouldn't be forgotten. Science does best with mathematical and mechanical models, and less well with models that can't be constructed along those lines. It has problems handling the operation of the intellect, and so a tendency to ignore the presence of intellect in various scientific areas. So if an intellect was involved in the origin and operation of the universe, we may be missing something, to say it no more strongly than that. And so that is a limitation on science. It would be helpful if science students could be shown where science has been mistaken in the past. It has been. There's a tendency to run science as sort of a triumphalistic presentation where all of those guys in the past were kind of dumb because they chose the wrong particular outlook, and these other guys were smart because they chose the right particular outlook. But the story's not over yet, and probably some of our own views are going to look pretty dumb 200 years from now. So it would be helpful if some of the students could be shown where science had been mistaken in the past, not to relativize science, but just to be aware of its limitations. For balance, Christians need to recognize where the Bible has been misinterpreted in the past also. I believe the Bible is God's Word and thoroughly reliable, but I don't believe that interpretations of it are necessarily thoroughly reliable, and it has been misinterpreted in the past as well. In teaching science in school, we need to distinguish the known from the unknown, fact from theory. Science teaching in elementary school, high school, often even in college, does not clearly distinguish data from theory. At least that's been my experience. And I've had, I don't remember as much about science teaching in elementary school, and of course it was a long time ago, but I had it on all of those levels, and grad levels as well, and it does not clearly distinguish data from theory. An example of that would be an essay on the daily life of Piltdown Man, which was written, and those are the sort of things that showed up even in science textbooks in previous generations. and yet it now turns out Cool Film Man was a forgery, and a hoax, if you like, and so he didn't have any daily life. So that was all theory, and yet some of the readers might not have been able to catch that at all. Creation has often been sloppy here as well, and I've read a good deal of young Earth creationist literature that involves speculations regarding tidal waves during the flood, etc., that are spoken of as if that was certain, though in fact there is no biblical evidence for that. Huh? We need to distinguish the known from the unknown fact from the theory. Yeah, it's probably going to be harder to do that when the kids are younger and such, but they ought to be building on that sort of thing all through our educational process. Some suggestions then for teaching science in amidst controversy, and these are drawn from a booklet published by the American Scientific Affiliation, a group of Christians in biology, in the science, entitled, very similar, Teaching Science in a Climate of Controversy. And there the book suggests that we should discuss open questions regarding origins matters, and we should handle a controversy sensitively in the classroom. And we want to have a look at each of these two headings and some of the subheadings under them rather briefly here. Discussing open questions in the science classroom that is into origins, one ought to ask the question, did the universe have a beginning? Not, well, the universe has always been, but our particular bubble in the universe came up at the Big Bang or something of that sort. We don't know from a scientific perspective what happened before the Big Bang or what happens outside our visible universe, etc. So that's an open question. Did the universe have a beginning or not? And what does the evidence for it look like? And how do we evaluate evidence of that particular sort? Did life arise by chance? Well, that's the standard teaching in most of your textbooks that discuss the origin of life. And yet, we don't know. You have to be able to kind of see behind the universe to tell whether it arose by chance or whether there was some kind of planning or design going on there. Where did the first animals come from? Discussion of the Cambrian explosion and such. And is that something that goes beyond what we've got any evidence that random processes selected by natural selection can do, etc.? So that's an open question that needs to be discussed. Obviously, there are people who think that life arose by chance, that the first animals came by some kind of a rather spectacular divergence that occurred in what we call a Cambrian explosion, and that all the steps further on are purely accidental and such, at least that should be discussed in class rather than being present dogmatically, rather than treating the theory as though it's fact. Do we humans share ancestry with the apes? Well, if you've already assumed some kind of a naturalistic worldview, that's what you've got, okay, given the data that we've got, with more open perspective on the question of whether there's a designer out there or not. The designer may have remodeled apes so that we do share ancestry with the apes, or may have used the ape body plan in some way that we don't share ancestry with the apes. We may get more information about this as we do more work with DNA, and we'll have to wait and see how that goes, but that should be discussed, okay? It doesn't need to be answered dogmatically one way or the other, and it can be brought up, and yes, it will bring controversy, okay, but that's going to be the whole question then of how do we handle controversy in the classroom. We're living now in a very diverse society, and we're going to have to handle controversy in the classroom. And the sort of PC approach to things, political correctness, that kind of quashes all of the non-political correct answers and just gives the other one, leads very much to the feeling of students that they're being imposed upon. They're being taught propaganda of some sort. We need to do something better than that. So how do we handle controversy? Well, here are the suggestions again from the ASA booklet, Teaching Science in a Climate of Controversy. Don't avoid the subject. uses this opportunity to discuss science on a topic in which most students are naturally interested. Most students are naturally interested in where we come from and interested in some of the debates and such going on. Don't avoid the subject. Use this as an opportunity. Try to keep the discussion within boundaries. Let's say this is a science class, and so we were not really going to get into a big discussion of Hindu views of origins, the Islamic views of origin, the Native American views of origins, the Christian views of origins, etc. We're going to try and stick to what scientific evidence looks for, looks like, but we still do want to handle controversy and look at the various open questions we've mentioned. We need to show respect for opposing views. That can be tough. That's going to be perhaps tougher in some ways on students who've been brought up in a particular way than it should be on the teachers. But we need to work to that in both directions and get the teachers to do that. Again, if we're going to live in a pluralistic society, then we need to show respect for opposing views. Respect for opposing views do not mean you agree with them. It means you believe they have the right to hold their own views and propagate their own views, though they and you both have a responsibility to try and find the truth, if possible, and need to discuss it with one another. Consider the whole spectrum of opinion. Now, you've got a finite amount of time, and you may consider some of the opinions to be perhaps too off the wall or something of that sort. I can understand that. And with the number of religions out there and the number of different views on origins, consider the whole spectrum of opinion, at least from a perspective of the stuff that scientific data could bear upon in one direction or another. And we do not know that our universe is a closed system of cause and effect, which has never been broken into by any intelligent beings from outside. We need to consider the whole spectrum. We don't need to consider the details of each point on the spectrum, but just think through what's going on there. Five, seek common ground. Where can we agree on things? Well, then we probably don't need a debate on that anymore, on that particular one. But one does not seek common ground by trying to rule the other ground out of bounds or something of that sort. We need to agree to disagree, and we need to figure out how to be pleasant in doing that, and how to help each of us sharpen each other. Watch your language. Be careful that you don't use terminology that's emotive, that gets people angry and things of that sort. You may not be able to solve that totally. Okay, for some people who get angry about things that perhaps they should not get angry about. And we do not want people bullying other people into being quiet about this or that sort of thing. We ought to be able to express our opinions, though we ought to do them in a way that shows respect. And seven, keep asking questions. Try and get people to be ones who have a mind that is open, and not a mind that's so open that any conclusions fall out of it, but a mind that's open enough to be willing to look at new data as it comes along. Be willing to look at new data that may have been around for a long time, but which the person has never seen. That's the sort of thing we need to do. Well, for further reading, I do suggest this ASA pamphlet, Teaching Science in a Climate of Controversy, A View from the American Scientific Affiliation, that is available from the American Scientific Affiliation. See their website at www.asa3.org. Well, let's take a quick tour at the end of our discussion here. Not the end of the controversy. Not, I'm afraid, for a long time.